You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Breaking news. The Rockets have finally landed Iman Shumpert. On that, welcome in to a special episode of Locked On Rockets, the second of Wednesday as we gear up for Thursday's trade deadline. And this, of course, is your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Wednesday evening, the Rockets are actually just about an hour away from tipping off against the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento. It'll be the fourth game of their four-game road trip, and one of the rotation members of the surprising Sacramento Kings, above 500 now through nearly two-thirds of the season, was Iman Shumpert. He will not be suiting up for the Kings tonight, and he will not be defending James Harden. That's because in a couple of days, he will be playing with James Harden. That because of the deal the Rockets struck earlier Wednesday evening with the Sacramento Kings and the Cleveland Cavaliers, a three-way trade in which Brandon Knight and a first-round pick, lottery protected, goes to Cleveland. Alec Burks goes to Sacramento. That deal between the Cavs and Rockets had been rumored before, but the question was how much does Burks, who is an average at best defender, really fit in Houston given the Rockets' needs? Well, Iman Shumpert, a better defender than Burks, and also a favorite of Mike D'Antoni going back to his New York days, there's a reason why multiple times in the past the Rockets have been linked as a potential Shumpert suitor. This time, it finally gets to the finish line. A bit surprising because it had not been rumored. And ultimately, the Kings having so much success with Shumpert playing over 25 minutes per game this year, it's a bit odd to see them deal him. But with this being the final year of his contract, they probably were not sure if they would retain him this summer, so it makes sense to get a bit of value. Rockets also in the trade getting Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin, at this point dealing both Knight and Marquese Chris in the trade, a three-way. Now you're taking in three players. Wade Baldwin, there's not much to him. My guess is they release him because they need a roster spot. But with Stauskas, he's a little more interesting, a former lottery pick who has elite shooting capability, potentially with the Rockets. I know he's been around a few years and has not lived up to his lottery promise at this point, but in a Mike D'Antoni system, you can never have too many shooters. That said, the obvious focal point of the deal is Iman Shumpert. So to break it down with me, I'm joined by resident Rockets fan, capologist, and all-around good guy, Karthik Prasad. You know him on Twitter as @StanfordKP. So it is my pleasure to bring him back on here at Locked On Rockets to break down this Iman Shumpert trade. Karthik, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you, Ben?
Doing well. A bit stunned by tonight's news, you might say. Iman Shumpert is someone who clearly has been on the Rockets' radar in the past. We had not talked about him leading up to this year's deadline. And, of course, there's some potential trickle-down effects to this move that we'll discuss as the show moves along. But to start off with, Karthik, I'm curious your thoughts on this. For me, it seems, at least to some degree, like a culmination of a pursuit that's been in the works for a while. I've seen some speculating that, well, could they buy him out? Because there's been comments from Tillman Fertitta about the luxury tax and specifically the repeater tax. We'll get to that. But as far as could they buy him out, could they reroute him, all of those things are possible. But the fact that it's a guy in Shumpert who Mike D'Antoni coached in New York, at least to some degree he fits their needs as a 3-and-D type, but has been linked to them in the past. I think back to July 1st of 2017, right after the Rockets had signed Chris Paul and before they added PJ Tucker and a couple of weeks later Luke Bamute, we knew they were looking for defensive-minded role players. At that time, he was coming off a bad season in Cleveland. A lot of Rockets fans wondered, why were they after him? Ultimately, that deal did not get to the finish line. This one did, in the midst of what's somewhat of a revival for Shumpert in Sacramento. Feels like he's been in the league forever. He's just 28 years old. He's playing good defense, and this year he's shooting nearly 37% from three, so he can give them something. But to me, my initial thought, Karthik, and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like Mike D'Antoni asked the Rockets to take a leap of faith on his guy. Because clearly there have been rumors, Garrett Temple, Jermichael Green, Alec Burks, lots of different defensive upgrades. But the fact that they went this route again with a guy who Mike D'Antoni has raved about in the past from his time in New York, it feels like this is someone that, be it the system fit, personality-wise, that MDA just has a good feeling about potentially fitting in this system, especially on the fly, where, as we saw with Lou Williams 2 years ago, sometimes it's tough to integrate guys midway through a year, and perhaps that's some of the thought with Shumpert, that he might be a little bit easier to integrate than others. Just your thoughts on Shumpert the player and how he fits with this current Rockets team.
Shumpert the player is a really solid fit here. Ali Bajani had some stats up already. He's a great corner three-point shooter. He's got finals and championship experience, especially versus the Warriors and chasing those shooters around the three-point line. I think he'll know his role in terms of the fit in the system and playing with a ball-dominant star, obviously previously with LeBron and now with James. And so I think the fit is there. I think they wanted someone who can chase those shooters and, you know, provide the 3-and-D role. I think so that's my reaction, I would say, on him as a player in the fit. I think, as you alluded to me, it's almost a no-regrets move, as at most a part one of for the trade deadline. And what I mean by that is, if they're going to use Knight and they're going to use a first-round pick, I think they had two criteria. Get an expiring contract, lower the tax bill, but also get someone who could help. So from those criteria, Shumpert hits all three. But what the timing of the trade is actually pretty interesting, because they could have just done this tomorrow if they needed to. And so the fact that he isn't expiring, though, means, you know, could he be rerouted? Maybe. Could there be other options? Maybe. But at the very least, if they end tomorrow with Shumpert still on the roster, I think they'll still feel good about it, because he hits all of their criteria of making an impact, helping this roster, and being a good fit.
And I suppose at the bare minimum, I know there are some that aren't crazy about giving up first-round picks, but he does make you a better basketball team. Brandon Knight was not playing. He clearly was not ready. And I think it's not that he has no future. He's only 26. But in terms of what they need, which is more defense, he's not going to give you that. Marquese Chriss obviously was not a fit here. And the first-round draft pick for a Rockets team that's all about win now, I said earlier today in my trade deadline preview episode, for the Rockets, that draft pick is a means to an end. It's highly unlikely that you're going to keep that pick, and then with a team that's focused on what's left of Chris Paul's prime and the next 3 or 4 years for MVP James Harden, that a rookie in the 20s is going to be a fit. That pick is a means to an end, and realistically, if you wait until after the selection, the value of it goes down. It's like taking a new car off the lot. So really, the liquidity of that pick was at its best at this deadline, and Shumpert, we can quibble over exactly how much, but he's definitely an upgrade relative to Brandon Knight and Marquese Chriss. There's a reason why he's played well over 25 minutes per game on a winning team in Sacramento, and if nothing else, it'll help the Rockets tonight, because now they don't have to be guarded by him on Shumpert, I would imagine, because this deal, it looks pretty close to official. Also, we should note, according to David Weiner, Rockets capologist at Bema Thug, the Rockets will generate both a $3.6 million traded player exception and a $3.2 million TPE, that for Brandon Knight and Marquese Chriss, respectively. So that does get into the theme that you said about giving them more options tomorrow. We'll get into those momentarily. I want to get a quick hit from you, Karthik, about Nick Stauskas. Wade Baldwin, I think it's pretty clear that eventually, when the Rockets need that roster spot, buyout, Staniel House, whatever it might be, they'll release him. They might even release him tomorrow. That's just about getting the trade legally complete. As far as Stauskas, he probably is not a fit, but you look at a guy who in 2014, a former lottery pick, top 10 at that, and at 1 year at least, was above 40% from three and was profiled as an elite shooter. I know it's unlikely, but do you have any hope at all that Stauskas in a Mike D'Antoni system, I mean, I know what his deficiencies are, but maybe a guy who's an elite shooter, he finds a second life here? Are you intrigued by that fit in the slightest?
Yeah, I mean, I would say if we do keep him, and I would say the odds are we don't. If we do, I mean, look at a guy like Gerald Green, who has a quick trigger, has found a role off the bench. He has a perennial green light, which is what we call him, right? And I think that, you know, if Mike is great at anything, it's giving confidence to guys who can shoot it and who want to shoot it. And so, if there's any place where Stauskas could fit and could thrive and could revive his career, I think it would be here. It's just, you know, obviously remains to be seen whether that's the case, but he'll get a ton of open looks. The question is whether he can start knocking them down.
I want to transition our discussion to what could come next, because as we're recording this about 8 p.m. on Wednesday evening, there's still 18 hours left until the deadline. There's plenty of time for the Rockets to make another move. As you said, one or more of these players could be rerouted. And then even if this is it for the Rockets at the deadline, there's still the buyout season. Wes Matthews could be out there. Wayne Ellington today going from Miami to Phoenix. It seems a formality that he'll be out there. He's an elite shooter. The Rockets still have Daniel House at the G League level if they would like to bring back, I think. So there's lots of options that the Rockets could go to. And to me, that's the more interesting aspect of this, is that it's not that there's no fit for Iman Shumpert. After all, even though the rebounding has been something that was a stated criteria, if you had better perimeter defense like you did a year ago, even if you'd have better rebounders, then if you're in better position, then perhaps that puts you in a better spot to secure those rebounds because you're not helping as much off of the initial breakdown courtesy of dribble penetration. So maybe Shumpert could help you in that regards, potentially being an upgrade over James Ennis, Gerald Green, whoever it may be. But when you factor in Shumpert as a 3-and-D type and the fact that the guys presumably available on the buyout market are also swingmen, Ellington, Matthews, you've got the Daniel House situation, you've still got most of your mid-level exception to use on one or more of those players. It's interesting because we went into this week talking a lot about Jermichael Green, the rebounding. It seems like there's a surplus of the 3-and-D. So that's where I'm curious, in your eyes, what comes next? Now, clearly, Mike D'Antoni is not afraid of playing small. It's very possible that they could keep Shumpert, add one more 3-and-D type, and just as we saw a couple years ago when they played those four-guard lineups, when they had Lou, Eric, Beverly, Harden, they could go small again. But it also could be that maybe there's a bigger target in terms of the rebounding that's still there, and even though they seem to have pivoted away from the Jermichael Green scenario, perhaps there's something else in terms of getting them bigger down the pipeline. So that's where I'm curious how you see this fitting in, because to me, at first glance, Shumpert does make you a better team defensively, and that's a need. It's just a little bit of a curious fit when you consider the fact that we know they're going to be aggressive in buyouts, and many of the people on the buyout market play similar positions to what Shumpert does, at least on paper.
And that's why I am still not sure that Shumpert stays here tomorrow, but especially because you could essentially flip him even for a guy like Jermichael Green if you wanted to tomorrow. But let's just say that he does. I've been thinking a lot about the Rockets and whether they embrace the small ball strategy and load up on 3-and-D types, give them just constant ability to run smaller lineups out there and just embrace that and double down on it versus picking up more size to battle some of the bigs they'll face. And I've gone back and forth, but it seems like the Rockets might be moving in the direction of smaller ball, which is, as you're saying, more 3-and-D wings, more small forwards being power forwards. So even if they bring back a guy like Daniel House, he might see more time at the four than he does at the three. And so I think tomorrow will tell us a lot about the direction and the strategy that they want to kind of build towards for the playoffs. I think they'll go after one of the buyout guys in Ellington and Wes. And if they had to choose, I hope they choose Ellington for his shooting, given that I think Shumpert kind of replaces the defensive versatility that Wes could bring. And I do think it'll be interesting to see what they do with House, but I think they should try and bring him back. I know Fagan had an article that said maybe it's not as likely as we initially thought, but you just never know. I mean, the key thing there will be the price of the buyout person and whether they demand some of the mid-level exception that we have versus just taking the veteran minimum, which would then free up some money for Daniel House. But we will see, because Shumpert now is an expiring contract, which can be flipped again for a guy like Jermichael Green or Markieff Morris that it preserves that optionality should those teams be willing to come back to the table. And even a team like Memphis, who has a kind of order of operations on getting Conley and Gasol out the door before they move a guy like Jermichael Green, you still at least have the option to pursue that if you want, as well as get some more intel on what guys like Ellington and Wes Matthews are going to do. So a lot in flux, but at the bare minimum, I think it's maybe a small signal that we're going to play smaller in the future.
I think so, and courtesy of Jonathan Fagan, just breaking in the last couple of minutes, I'm reading his tweet from his Twitter timeline. A lot of talk about the Rockets adding Shumpert's defense. Not to be overlooked is this from Austin Rivers. He's definitely an entertaining guy. I'm excited for the conversations he and Gerald are going to have. That's we can all be a part of. It'll be fun. So even though Mike D'Antoni and the Kings coach, they did not discuss it on the record, the fact that the players are discussing it, it seems that at least they're under the impression at the moment that Shumpert will be sticking. Now you never know. But generally, if there's a reroute, many times they'll condition the players to where don't get too attached. Now, with Daryl Morey, obviously things can change on a dime. But at least for now, as we're recording it, it seems like he's going to stay. And I'm with you. Either way, whether they reroute or he sticks, you can play small. It seems like that's something that they want to do a lot more. And potentially, that's where even if you add one more wing player on top of Shumpert, then if you're playing small ball, it can still work out. So my last question on the Shumpert part specifically for you. If they keep him starting Saturday against Oklahoma City, which is certainly a game they could use his defense in, whose minutes does he take? James Ennis is one candidate. He's been shooting well, but certainly his defense has not been what we'd all like it to be. Maybe Gerald Green, who can be hit or miss. Just curious, if they keep him and if he suits up, certainly not tonight, but potentially Saturday against Oklahoma City, whose minutes does he initially take? Because I'm guessing he's a guy playing for Mike D'Antoni before. They'll feel pretty comfortable throwing him into the system and at least for 20 minutes a game, just letting him sink or swim.
I think in the first part of maybe the first couple of games, I would say the biggest candidate to start taking minutes from is Austin Rivers.
Okay.
For a couple of reasons. I think one, Shumpert has, I think, the physicality and the quickness to guard someone even, for example, like Westbrook. In a way, and Rivers is good at doing that too, but I think, you know, they've really played Rivers a lot of minutes over the last, call it 6 weeks, and I think they'd like to kind of get him back in a sustainable rotation with the bench, and so I think Shumpert comes in, spells Rivers a little bit more, provides that defensive intensity, and you know, Rivers has been struggling with a shot, and, you know, there's been speculation about, has his hand been bothering him? And I think, you know, Shumpert can start taking some of those shots and fit right in that role. So I think that's where I see the most natural fit starting this weekend.
And also on the note of Shumpert, another thing just breaking, Adrian Wojnarowski's story at ESPN, Woj, the guy who initially broke the trade, says he's expected to play a significant bench role for the Rockets in their Western Conference playoff push. So generally, Woj gets his info from the GMs, and at this point, it seems like he's being led to believe that Shumpert is here to stay. Of course, he can't be traded in aggregate, but considering his salary is over $11 million, then ultimately there is a path for the Rockets. His salary is large enough that if something shakes free, that is still an option. Also, one thing that we should note is that he's traded for Brandon Knight, largely in terms of he makes $11 million, Knight at $15. So we've talked a lot about the potential moving forward to use Knight's salary as filler, as matching for down the road. Shumpert being the last year of a multi-year deal, the Rockets would have his bird rights. So if he works out and if they need filler, there is a path to potentially retain him. So at least that's something that I think the Rockets have in their back pocket. Moving forward, there is a path. Should it work out and should they feel like that they need filler down the road, perhaps, then it's not like all of a sudden you take just the cash savings because he is expiring this year, and that's the reason that the Kings, even though he's been good there, traded him. There is a path, if you choose to keep him, that you can potentially, well, A, get the benefit of him, the player, and also the benefit of Shumpert, the contract. Speaking of Shumpert, the contract, our final couple of minutes here with Karthik Prasad. We've spoken a lot over the last 20 minutes about Shumpert the player, what he can bring, other possibilities for the Rockets at the deadline. The other aspect of this, and I'm not naive, there are a lot of folks on Twitter wondering about, because it's one less year in salary, about the Tillman Fertitta component. Is this just to avoid the luxury tax? And the answer this year, no. Unless they buy him out, they're still above the tax. And as far as, is it a move just for the tax, just for the cash savings? I don't think so, because it's a guy they've been after before, as I've mentioned. If they were just interested in shedding salary, they could have done the deal with Cleveland without even throwing in an extra second-round pick, and just gotten Alec Burks and realized the same savings. The fact that they expanded it to a three-way and got a guy that they've been after before, has a relationship with Mike D'Antoni, tells me that at least partially this is about the basketball. Now, we can argue about the rest. Honestly, I think we won't truly know until the summer when we see what they do with Shumpert's bird rights, how much of an effort they make to retain him. But the first thing I saw today on the record from Adam Spillane of 610, who I believe spoke with Tillman at the Houston Sports Awards, and he quoted Tillman as saying this: as long as one of the next 3 years we're not over the luxury tax, I don't care. We have a chance to win a championship this year. If they want to go $10 million over, I don't really care. So the good news, they're not trying to deduct the tax this year. What this confirms is that they are not willing to pay the repeater tax, which is what happens when you're in the tax for three consecutive years. They've hinted at it before. This is the first that I've seen a direct reference that pretty much spells it out. Now, it doesn't mean Tillman's a bad owner, because honestly, hardly anybody pays the repeater tax. It is really punitive. That said, it does seem to confirm that unless there's something crazy this year that gets them under, either the 2019-2020 season or the 2020-2021, there's going to be something coming down the pike to get them under the tax one of those years so that they're not eventually in the repeater category. So just your thoughts. Clearly, Chris Paul's contract is what it is. James Harden's about to get the kick up into supermax level. When you read that quote, I know it's not shocking. They've hinted at it before. But clearly, it suggests that something, either next season or 2020, is going to come that's going to significantly shake up the current payroll structure, does it not?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I mentioned from the jump that I think this is a no-regrets move, because they're now close enough where if they really wanted to be aggressive tomorrow and they saw the rest of the landscape shaking out and said, okay, can we make a move or two to get under the tax? Maybe they do it. And then the fact that they have that optionality is really important for this year. Because you're right, do they bite that bullet and say, well, we're not going to pay the tax this year, so that the next 2 years now we can be even more aggressive starting this summer when some more stars are available, et cetera. Number one, I think that optionality, at least in the next 24 hours, is important. But number two, I mean, I think it raises the point about the next couple of seasons. I mean, the major piece that comes to mind is Eric Gordon, right? That he his contract, he'll expire after the 2020 season. They've talked to him about an extension. He's turned it down. You know, thinking about his role here this year, next year, but then also how do you replace that, or how do you think about what he brings long term? I think has direct correlation to the tax, because the rest of the pieces are almost locked in. I mean, you've got Harden, Capella, and Chris, at least for the next 3 years. So, you know, guys like Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, you know, think about the mainstays and how their role evolves over time. But it makes sense to me. I mean, I think they have to at least take 1 year to be even more efficient, even more lean than they would like to be. And, you know, you can make the argument that they've done that this year. They've been as lean as possible while keeping themselves in the playoff hunt. Now, whether they stay above the tax and embrace it, if there's opportunities to improve the roster in the next 24 hours, maybe they do it. But they also have the option to get back under the tax, which might open up next year and the year beyond for more possibilities. So that's how I'm thinking about it right now.
I think that's fair. Last question for you. We've spoken a lot throughout the show about the immediate impact if they keep Shumpert, which at least now appears to be the plan, and potentially minor moves they could make. They have most of their mid-level exception, so Wes Matthews, Wayne Ellington, they could be players for them. There's Daniel House. There's lots of different directions that they could go moving forward. If there's something that's not a minor move like that, or some other incremental role player, as you mentioned earlier, Jermichael Green, it is a landscape. It seems to be very active in the NBA. The Otto Porter trade came out of nowhere. Maybe that's correlated to the John Wall situation. We'll see what happens with Bradley Beal. The Clippers and Tobias Harris, no one saw that deal to Philly coming. If there's something in the next 18 hours that shakes free for the Rockets, what is a situation that you're keeping your eye on? A name that's bigger than, say, the Shumpert, Jermichael Green tier. Is there a team or a player that you're monitoring that makes you kind of raise your eyebrow and say, this might be a fit for the Rockets until we get to the other side of the deadline?
The name that I had been and will now even more so continue to watch is Bradley Beal. Obviously, I was more interested in that scenario an hour and a half ago before we traded for Iman Shumpert because we could match salaries for him in an easier way, but and we had all our picks. But I still think it'll be interesting to see if Washington pushes themselves to trade him now versus in July. But, you know, whether on Clutch Fans or other places, I mean, I think the fact is, I think we're interested in Bradley Beal as a star who's going to relocate. How do you put yourself in the position, whether tomorrow or in July, to make a worthy package of him? That's to me the guy that could really move tomorrow and actually make a huge impact on a contender. And maybe the Rockets do it, but I think it's just something to really think about.
The asset's definitely a lot tougher now. You give it up your 2019 first, as mentioned. I think the Rockets were open to doing that because, really, if you don't use it now by this deadline, ultimately the value is going to go down once you make the pick. But I thought you made a really good point on Eric Gordon, which is the fact that beyond 2020, they've already had discussions with him on an extension. They couldn't come to an agreement, which tells you that the two sides weren't in alignment as far as his valuation. And then this year, he's been better in January, but by and large, aside from his clutch shot making, he has been well below average, or at least below expectations, I should say. Average isn't fair, but below his standard. So, to me, another side effect of this Knight deal and their willingness to deal him, and despite the fact that his matching salary could be useful next year, what it tells you, or tells me at least, is that Eric Gordon and his expiring salary could be used in many of the same ways that we formerly anticipated Brandon Knight's expiring salary being used. So to me, that's something that you keep your eye on, maybe that they're willing to let Brandon Knight go because you have Eric Gordon's salary to fill into that role. So I agree with you, it's probably next year, but if it's possible a year from now, you can't completely rule it out at this deadline, correct? If it's someone, if you're looking at Eric Gordon and you don't see him beyond 2020, while it's not likely, at the same time, my sense is that you can't completely rule it out until we get to 2 p.m. tomorrow. Is that fair?
Yep, absolutely. Because he's a known quantity and a known commodity for us. Like, we know what he brings. We know his value in the playoffs. We know his value versus the Warriors. And he had a great series versus them last year. But if there's an opportunity, and knowing that, you know, his impact almost has a shelf life with us over the next, call it, year and a half, you do be aggressive if an opportunity comes for a younger star level player. I think that's definitely on the table. It will be painful, obviously, but it's something that you definitely think about because of the tax implications, because of his probably his own, rightfully so, his own incentives to maximize his earnings, his contract, et cetera, over the long term. So I'm watching out for it because I think that's probably the biggest domino to fall, whether tomorrow or this summer. It'll be interesting to watch.
No doubt. Folks, he's Karthik Prasad. You can follow him on Twitter at StanfordKP. And please come back for more episodes, Karthik, because I love having you on here as much as we can.
Always. And it's an exciting time for the Rockets. It'll be really interesting to see what happens tomorrow and beyond.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Talk more soon. Good stuff there with Karthik Prasad. I think he summed up all the immediate storylines very well. We'll see what happens over the next 18 hours, if there are more moves for the Rockets by the deadline. And then tomorrow afternoon, we'll finally have a closing trade deadline episode. What happened? And we'll also recap the game tonight for the Rockets, by the way. I know it's just one of 82, but do you finish the road trip 3-1 or 2-2? And against a team you're competing with for playoff positioning? Yeah, the Kings are a very good team, although now they don't have Iman Shumpert, so perhaps that hurts them a little bit. We'll have to wait and see. Hopefully his absence will give James Harden a chance to shine tonight. He will do that anyway, but perhaps not having a guy that can tire him out can give an even better version of Harden against the Kings. We'll have to wait and see. But tomorrow we'll be recapping that game along with breaking down whatever happens at the deadline. And then based on what the Rockets do or don't do and who gets moved around the league, we'll also start to see the buyout market coming into focus and who potentially the Rockets can go after there or if there's any movement on the Daniel House Jr. front. Whatever happens, though, for better or for worse, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage, and sometimes twice daily, like today, of your Houston Rockets. If you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, go to an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a website, lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan, or just you, the human being, don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. And of course, you as a businessman as well would love to have your advertising interest. Also, facebook.com/lockdownrockets. That's another way to interact, get our content, ask me things about the Rockets or anything else. We want to be your daily source. We want to be interactive. So if we can help you in any way, don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, if you're not subscribed to the podcast already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, the odds are you can find Lockdown Rockets because we're part of a great network of shows at the Lockdown Podcast Network, experts across the entire NBA. So you can find this show or any others across the association. Subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. Even if you can't advertise yourself, as mentioned earlier, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. If you want our specials, then subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. That's the best way you can help us. You get the benefit of episodes delivered right to your inbox before I can even post them on Twitter. And we get the benefit through your subscription and hopefully your 5-star review of looking attractive to other potential advertisers and keeping the business model rolling here at Lockdown Rockets as the only daily home for Houston Rockets podcast coverage. Also, a final plug I want to throw out about this wonderful Lockdown Podcast Network. We're going to have a live trade deadline show tomorrow at the Lockdown Fantasy Basketball YouTube channel. That's hosted by Josh Lloyd, our fantasy expert, and he will be co-hosting it with David Locke, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz and host of Lockdown Jazz and the godfather of the entire network. They'll be breaking it down starting at 12:30 Houston time, 90 minutes before the 2 p.m. deadline and for some time after that as well, depending on what happens. I may even be hopping on myself for a bit to break down this Iman Shumpert deal and anything else that shakes free involving your Houston Rockets. So for today, hopefully this is it. Lots of coverage on this very busy Wednesday before the trade deadline. And who knows, with Daryl Morey, Thursday might be even busier. Oh, and before then, we'll also have a late Wednesday game in Sacramento as well. So with that, this is where I will sign off for this Wednesday, February 6th. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow, breaking down whatever happens tonight against the Kings and tomorrow on the actual deadline day. For now, have a good evening, and thanks again for listening to episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.